This is the highest point in all our land, looming above the wilderness with the strange silence of eternity. Yet stranger still is the mission of destiny that brings men to this forbidding barrier. Held at bay by the most dangerous killer since Dillinger. Look at him up there.
What's the matter, Yellow? Come and get me, buddy. Come and get me.
So here we are. The Bigfoot Show on location. So we're sitting in the around camp in the Stanislaw National Forest in the Sierras here in Central California. Central California, right? You would call it? Are these the Western much. Sierras? What do you
We call them, well, Northern Sierras.
Northern Sierras? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm with my good friends Bob and Kathy Strain, and Daniel Falconer's come all the way from New Zealand just to be on the Bigfoot Show.
Hello.
So I think that's something to be excited about. So we're out here spending a week in these forests in the haunts of Bob and Kathy doing some Bigfootin', as they say now on the television. The kids today are all doing that. So I thought, you know, we're sitting here, the darkness is gathering, we're waiting to go out on another exciting evening of professional Sasquatch research, and while we were waiting for it to get appropriately dark, we thought we'd squeeze in a little on-location Bigfoot show. First ever. You guys excited?
Yeah. Very.
Absolutely.
And you got the best looking crew for the show tonight that you've ever had on a Bigfoot show as well. It's a shame it's not video.
It's a shame. Of course, we haven't showered in... Well, you and I haven't showered in several days.
Not the best smelling.
Right.
Maybe.
So it's a good thing that smell-o-vision hasn't been... So, and Kathy, this is your third appearance on the Bigfoot Show. That's three times more than any other special guest.
That's correct. That's what? Because I'm fantastic.
Is that how you... I was going to ask you, how do you explain your repetitive appearances on the Bigfoot
Show? I'm always
available. You're always available? You're an attention whore? Is that what it is?
Oh, my God, I need a guest. Can you do it? Of course. Oh, I got nothing else going on.
So we came here, and you guys have been in the area for a really long time.
Yes.
Kathy, you work for the Forest Service. You work in this forest.
Yes.
So you're very familiar with the area, and what are some of the stories that have come out of here? Because you were telling me the other day that as working in the Forest Service office, people report things all the time to the Forest Service.
Correct. I've been here about 14 years.
Okay.
And so recreationists that are out here enjoying themselves in campgrounds or dispersed camping will come in and report something strange that's happened. Like, you know, we got ran out of the area because something was throwing rocks at us and we didn't feel safe. Or there's this god-awful screaming going on. We've had several reports of that just in the last 4 or 5 months. Wow. In the same location where people are concerned that something odd is happening and they think the Forest Service should know about it so that they can fix it. And so over the years, sometimes they don't come into the front desk. Sometimes they'll tell a Forest Service employee they see out doing, you know, cleaning toilets or doing other activities, and they'll point it out, you know, there's something really strange. And, for example, last year in the same location where we're at, the people that were camping next to us told the campground host that the bears around here walked on 2 feet, and they were concerned about that. And I would be concerned about that, too. So
they left at 5:30 in the morning.
That's fat.
And made that comment as they left.
That they're leaving because the bears walk on 2 feet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So, over the 14 years, what are some of the more memorable things that you've heard coming out of this forest?
Well, most of them occur in this general location and occur with hunters that have been sitting very quietly in meadows during hunting season starting in September. And because they're quiet and observing, looking for deer, they've been able to see what they report as a Sasquatch walking quietly across the meadow, you know, maybe a little cautious, but being basically doing its thing, picking up berries or other roots or tubers that are available to them and just acting very casual. Probably the most spectacular one is a biologist that was a U.S. Forest Service biologist. He was doing a survey for aquatics. Frog survey up on Bloomer Lake, and as he was coming back to his vehicle, he came across a deer that was dead and had its back leg ripped off, and he thought that was pretty strange. And he kept on walking down to his car, and he came across another deer that was still alive but panicked, very sweaty, and he was able to walk up to it and touch it because it was so panicked, and it was looking off to its left at the hillside. And so he, of course, followed the deer's gaze and right there, about, I believe it was somewhere around 50 yards, maybe a little closer, was a Bigfoot looking at him.
Was it munching on the deer leg, like a big turkey leg?
No, it was just kind of like, oh, you see me. And so it walked off, and then he said it just kind of disappeared. And by that, he has always been very adamant about saying it didn't go
evaporate.
Poof.
Right.
No, it just, he could no longer distinguish it from the other vegetation. And it shook him so bad, he got in his car, came back down to the Summit Ranger
he
District
left the
office.
Deer. That poor panicked deer.
Yeah, he was more panicked, way more panicked. But he told his supervisor and my archaeologist at the time. I'm not sure if I was just gotten here or not, but it was around 1998, and repeated the story to them about what he had seen. He was very panicked. He then left the Forest Service, and the story came to me from several different avenues.
Wow.
And I was able to I think I met him, but he never relayed it. But it was very soon afterwards he left. And then he went on to another agency, and I called him there, and he told me, and he just said, you know, what it did to me was totally collapse everything I had been taught. And, you know, I was taught to be, you know, a scientist, this stuff doesn't exist. And then once you see it, you just feel like your whole world has totally changed. And so...
What is the... And, of course, the Forest Service official opinion would be one thing, but what's the... how do you find people in the Forest Service locally who work here? How do they take these reports?
They take them seriously, and they're very open to taking them. You know, nobody wants a person coming here to recreate to feel like they're in danger or they're not having a good time. And so, what is it that's causing it? And they'll go investigate it, and then they'll report back to me. You know, this is what they're saying.
So they're not just rolling their eyes and assuming
they take it very seriously.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. So the specifically one of the reasons we're here is because, Daniel, you were here last year with Bob and Kathy. Mm. In fact, I think it was almost exactly a year ago now.
Almost a year ago now, yeah.
And I said at the beginning of the show that you were here for just the Bigfoot show, and I know that that's a big reason why you came, but you mostly came for your job, right? You came to be at Comic-Con.
Yep, I work in the film industry at Weta in New Zealand, and we come to Comic-Con and we show cool stuff, and which, you know, it's work, but it's actually also play.
Oh, it's
and that's also
awesome
consequently why I have very little voice left, so I apologize if I sound all croaky. And so the nice thing about it is that being in California, in fact, I try and do this every time I'm in the States for any reason, is because of my interest in Sasquatching, take a couple of days after I'm here for work and take advantage of being here to go out and catch up with friends and maybe get out, do some camping.
I have to ask how a boy in New Zealand became interested in this subject.
I was, I can't remember the exact instant that I was interested, but I do remember that when I was in what we call primary school, so I would have been about, you know, 7 or 8.
Okay.
They, we would every now and again get to watch a film, and they would take us down to this tiny little wee dark room in the school that was called the theater, and it fit, you know, 20 kids jammed into a tiny little space, and they had a little reel-to-reel projector there, and they would put on a film. And one of the films they put on had the Patterson-Gimlin footage in it. Cool. And I remember just seeing that and my jaw hitting, you know, the floor and just thinking, oh my goodness, look at that. And being so impressed by how, I mean, I didn't question at the time that it was a real animal.
Right.
Because it looked as real as anything I'd been seeing on nature documentaries. Right. And I was always a nature documentary junkie even at that age. So I was always fascinated by it. But, you know, you put that kind of thing to the back of mind as best you can when you live in a wooded area. I guess always had an interest in it.
So not so much different than anybody else.
Not really.
It's
I mean, I think Western culture is largely ubiquitous. And so the stories you guys hear, you know, growing up, we hear them too. We watch the same movies you guys do. So it's part of our culture, even though in New Zealand there really isn't much, certainly not a local tradition of it. so I've always been fascinated. But through my work later on, we you know, at various times have tried to get TV shows off the ground that or worked on movies that had a slight cryptozoological bend.
Uh-huh.
And that led to me, you know, for work purposes doing research, which very, very quickly became just something that I love doing for fun anyway. And I kind of discovered this community and have been in it now for the last sort of 5 or 6 years, bouncing around various forums, just learning as much as I can.
And last year you did sort of like a Sasquatch tour of the U.S. You were all over the place.
I call myself a Bigfoot tourist. It's great. I've been to the state. I've only watched maybe in half a dozen different places, but I've always had incredibly gracious hosts in all those places and different groups, different friends, folks who aren't necessarily affiliated with any particular group. And you know, I need to thank them very much for hosting me and allowing me to come and, you know, just hang out with them and soak up as much information as I can. And always, you know, I mean, I have no realistic expectation of ever having an experience, because I think the odds are remote, you know, for somebody who comes here for a few days a year, goes out in the woods, it would be remarkable, right?
Right.
But by the same token, of course, you can't help but hope in the back of mind you do. But to be honest, for me, it's social, it's a chance to learn and get out in the field and experience the wilderness, which is just so beautiful out here. See animals I've never seen at home.
Right.
And hear some really cool campfire stories.
But you may be hearing there's the local ravens that may be flying by. They've been cawing. So if anybody hears that at home, that's not... Oh, and there's little birds. I can hear them too. Anyway, you may hear the ravens. We commented last night that you're sort of like the Bigfoot Switzerland. You seem to get along with everyone. No one seems that, even though there's all these little, like, you know, issues and
little wars
and
everywhere.
Balkanization of the Bigfoot research community.
I try not to take sides.
You somehow float over the top of all
that. I try not to get too deep into any of that stuff. You know, I'm just here to learn, and I think so. I try to listen more than I speak.
You're kind of like that guy in the Day of the Earth Stood Still. You came out and you. Came out of your ship and everyone gets along. I don't know. So, Bob, why did you guys come here last year? Why this area?
Well, this area we know does have a history of Bigfoot sightings. It's a combination of things, of course. You know, Tuolumne County has, on the BFRO database, has the second most reported sightings of any county. Second to Humboldt County in the state of California. So it has a long history, and of course 30, 40 years ago there were stories of deputies seeing a 10-foot monster, and it made the newspaper. So this entire area has a lot of history, but this particular spot right here has a lot of things going for it. Number one, it's less than an hour drive from our house.
Right.
It's fairly easily accessible. It is in an area that and we use call blasting sometimes to try to locate the Sasquatch. Not necessarily using the call blasting as our only tool, but number one, finding out if they are indeed in the area, to whereabouts they might be. And that can help us close in on them a little closer and kind of pinpoint their habitat. And we will change locations throughout the year depending on the resources that are available. Right now it's mid-July and the berries haven't quite ripened yet. And generally it's warmer. This Tuolumne County has a lot of resources, and it also has advantages of elevation. So it has different microclimates, if you will. The lower the elevation, the warmer it is, and the sooner things are going to ripen.
Right.
And if we can follow the resource trail, the food trail, and that's what part of what brings us to this area here is the time of year. If it were later in the year, we might not be here. We might be a little higher in elevation.
That makes sense.
So there's a lot of different factors.
It's remarkable that you are, we were at your house the other day. It's 45 minutes to you know, the depths of a national forest in prime territory. It's just a terrific position to be in.
Didn't happen by accident.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Very specific.
See, it has a lot. Of course, Kathy works here.
Yeah.
In the area, and I'm a retired firefighter, so I teach on the side part time. So it's that's I can drive. It's nothing for me to drive a few extra minutes to go to work.
Right.
Than for us to. This is our goal. This is what we love. This is what we want to do, and so us positioning ourselves to be the best for us.
Right.
And that's what we've worked at doing. And luckily, this area does seem to be fairly productive.
It's another cool thing about you guys that you're almost unique in that this field of interest brought you together, and now you can share this. I've always sort of admired the fact that it's just a really cool feature, right? Of your marriage, that you have this really big common interest.
We complement each other very well.
Yeah.
She has the brains, and
You got everything else.
You're the beauty.
Right.
I can't. Yeah.
So last year you guys were here, not too far from where we are.
She's the beauty.
She's of course she is. Not too far from where we are. There's a rather nice spot that is overlooking a valley and if you're going to call blast, it's a great place to do it from. Mm-hmm. Because the sound rolls and travels for quite a ways. So you guys were here last year, and you were in that spot, and you all shared a very interesting experience. Mm-hmm. Can you guys tell me about that? Who wants to go first?
Well, you got Kathy and Bob had been there earlier and had blasted from that spot, hadn't you? You'd had some interesting returns, so that's why that was a site of interest to us. Mm-hmm. But we had, on the first night that these guys kindly hosted me here, we were there for 3 nights. We went up there, did a call, and as I recall, we had something interesting come back.
Mm-hmm.
But you also lost your ring that night.
Yeah, that night I had pulled my hand out of my pocket, and my wedding ring had gone flying, and I didn't know it until later on that night. And so I was pretty frustrated, and we looked around camp the following day, didn't find anything, tried a new location for call blasting, and then Wednesday morning, we had said, well, let's go back to where we were the first night and see if we can find it. And Tom Yammerman was here with us. And we're looking through the dirt, and he finds it within, 5 minutes of us being there. And I was like, ah. And then in the meantime, David Osborne had gone down the road and found what appeared to be two footprints, or one really good footprint, and then Daniel found another one on the other side that indicated to us that there was probably recent activity in the area. Mm-hmm. So we decided to call blast from that location that night. And so about 8 o'clock we started. We only did 2 call blasts in total, and it just kind of had quite a lot of activity where starting about, from 8 to 10, basically something was creeping around us. We were had a big mm-hmm. fire. We were singing and laughing and making all kinds of noise.
So this, look, just so I can paint the picture in everyone's mind, this area, it's at sort of a shoulder of a ridge.
Of a ridge.
And
yes.
It's quite clear up there, mm-hmm. but there's especially on one side, the forest comes quite close.
Correct.
So if you are, you can be observed from a distance when you're up there.
Right.
And it's if you're a curious primate, it's probably a fairly safe place to feel like you can get kind of sneak up on you guys and observe.
Yes. It faces sort of to the southeast, doesn't it? Like if you're standing on that spur of land and where we had our little campfire and you were call blasting out, which we did, you're looking out to the south for the most part. But on the western side of it is this little narrow valley that's quite densely forested, and there are little game trails running through it. I remember when we were looking at the footprints, I went and walked down through there, and it was very uncomfortable walking around in there. I felt quite
very
vulnerable,
close.
Very close, very vulnerable feeling. But that then comes up to a little road that bisects the site, and there's a little knoll of land on the far side of that's also got trees on it that overlooks it. And the interesting thing to me was that we were hearing movement off down to the west in this little wee narrow valley quite close by. And then it wasn't long before we heard a wood knock sort of to the northwest. Again, pretty close. I mean,
really close.
What sense did you get? I've thought
it felt like it was
a
few hundred yards at the most. It was right
there.
Right there. And obviously for me, what wood knocks are just a locational. It wasn't trying to communicate with us. It was trying to tell something else where it was. And it was very close to us. And that kind of continued this little kind of shuffle, moving through the area type event until about 10 o'clock. And then we had a huge raging fire, and that's, I think, a huge factor.
So you weren't being Secret Squirrel about this. You were sitting out there.
We were
totally
being rowdy.
You're playing music. You're
trying to be as entertaining as possible. We're getting up. Bob was doing an amazing interpretive dance to some of Tom Yammerone's songs. It was awesome.
Tom was playing his guitar.
Yes.
Yeah,
yep. Yeah. Dave took a turn on the guitar. We were all up there. Jerry Heim was with us. We were all up there dancing and having a good time. For my part anyway, for the express intention of being as interesting as possible, so that something curious might want to come and check us out, which evidently it appears something did, because around 10 o'clock, looking back up at that little knoll of land that I described on the far side of the road that bisect the site, overlooking us, great strategic point, because the only way you could approach it is through in the open, and there were plenty of avenues for retreat that we could never possibly cut them off on. I've spotted first one pair of red eyes, and then quickly followed by 3 more, until we had 4 pairs of red eyes up on this hill overlooking us.
And Red, did you get the impression that they were emitting light, or do you think they were reflecting your campfire, or how were they red?
They were like the color of hot coals, and not as bright as if something had, you know, little LEDs up there.
Right.
But so, for my part, I mean, I'm assuming, and I can only say what I observed. My interpretation would be that they might be reflecting.
Right.
Because curiously enough, later on in the evening, if we moved too far out of the line between the eyes and the fire, we would not see them anymore.
Right.
And so, thinking back now, I interpret that as the reflection was no longer apparent from that angle.
Was there anything in you observed that helped you identify these as being eyes on a face like ours, or could they have been owls or deer or some other type of animal?
I know initially my thought was, well, maybe we're seeing deer, because the previous night we'd had a deer come very close to our campfire, but that was very obviously a deer after the first few seconds of looking at it, because it had eyes on the sides of its head, and when it turned its head, one eye would roll around, and you could very clearly see that was
right.
A herbivorous animal with you know, side-facing eyes, whereas these eyes, to my observation anyway, appeared to be on a flat face, because they would turn and look at each other, and then they would look at us, and you could see that, you know, the face
the plane
turn,
of them, like,
and you
yeah.
could still see two eyes, even when they were almost directly
right.
facing, you know, 90 degrees to us.
How many of you saw the eyes shine?
Mostly just Daniel and I. I think everybody else had little glimpses, but didn't have, and it was strange that we were the only two that didn't have glasses on at the time.
Huh.
So I don't know if that was a factor or not, but both of us saw exactly the same thing at the same time. And it went on for roughly 4 hours. They outside of some movement to come see individuals, you know, as we try to approach them later, they pretty much stayed in the same location.
So some of you actually broke off and went up to
we
them.
We kind of took turns a little bit. I mean, it got a little bit out of step and stuff, but we initially tried to take turns. It should be said for the record, and this is one of my sort of, like, I don't get it moments, it was that, like Tom, as far as I'm aware, didn't see anything the whole night. Is that what he said?
I think he said he saw flickers.
Right. And Jerry and Dave, I believe, saw some things, yeah. But and Bob, what did you witness?
A flicker, a couple yeah. of red flickers, but
not sustained thing. I mean, I saw two pairs of eyes, occasionally blinks, mm-hmm. you know, movement mm-hmm. backwards and forwards, swaying. I mean, there was no doubt. It's worth also mentioning, you know, we've been back to the site while we've been here this year,
yeah.
and you were with us, Brian, and we observed little flickers of red in there, which at first I was like, oh my goodness, they're back.
They're back. Yeah.
But you quite rightly called them out, that what we are witnessing this time around, at least, appear to be little, you know, luminescent bugs flickering through there.
And the only reason I knew that is because I had experienced those, I don't know if it's the same bug or not, but when we were at Skookum Meadow several years ago, little flashes, and they're just instantaneous flashes, and in the, mm. you know, I, and I've seen eye shine, and when you see eye shine, it
it's
is clearly eye shine, right?
Yeah. This was sustained. This was two pairs of eyes looking at us, looking away, looking at each other, blinking, weaving backwards and forwards in the trees. I mean, that was one of the cool things. Unfortunately, while we couldn't see silhouettes because they were inside the tree line, and the tree, you know, the trees were basically just huge big black shapes against
right.
a vaguely starry sky,
right.
And all you could see were these eyes moving backwards and forwards within them, but you could see where they would pass behind some leaves, or they would pass behind a trunk of a tree
mm-hmm.
and then weave backwards and forwards.
And you said earlier this is a sort of, it's quite near actually where you guys possibly found track impressions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, you guys had been there earlier, years mm-hmm. earlier, and seen something vaguely similar
yes.
as well,
right,
hadn't you?
Right.
And David was with
and
you.
And Dave,
with you.
Yeah. Was Dave Osborne with you when you guys,
time.
The
yes.
first
yeah.
time? Okay.
Yeah.
yeah. So you approach them. So how close did you get? And did you perceive anything other than the eye shine when you came up to them? How did you interact with them in any way?
Well, I mean, my thought was, and these guys were kind enough let me go first. I guess they were kindly thinking, well, this might be my one and only chance.
Let me just pause here for a second. You're walking towards these spooky red
yes.
eyes. Yeah. How did they feel when you were doing that?
I was doing my best to try and make sure that I was not projecting what I was feeling into the situation. Obviously, I was anxious.
Right.
Because but by the same token, I've been interested in the subject enough, and I've done enough reading on it to get a sense that maybe some of the time it doesn't need to be a scary experience.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, well, I'm going to push this as far as I feel comfortable with. So I'm going to approach them on the assumption that I'm not in immediate danger, knowing that most animals, or even people for that matter, will give you some kind of warning before it gets physical, right?
Right.
So I felt I didn't have a reason to be alarmed.
And so you're trying to be very rational about this.
I was desperately trying to be rational
about thinking about the red-eyed monsters in the trees.
Well, to me, yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, I can tell you I had nightmares about them as kids, you know, when watching movies, scary movies and stuff, you know. Right. But I'm trying to be rational. And I'm trying to, and I'm also trying to apply, because I studied science at university. I changed and didn't finish my art degree instead. But I tried to approach it as rationally as possible. And like, okay, in primatology, one of the things you can do is to try and establish a rapport and establish a bit of a trust thing is to approach. And then if they don't retreat, then you voluntarily retreat and show, look, I'm not trying to advance on you. I'm giving you space, but I would like, and you gradually inch closer.
So you're doing your best Diane Fossey imitation here.
Totally. Totally. It visions in my mind of Sasquatch in the mist, but I'm doing my best to get close. But I think I maybe got to within about, I don't know, 50, 60 feet of them the first time I went up, and I sort of sat down and faced half away from them, and I just talked quietly to myself and that sort of thing. And when they didn't retreat, then after a wee while, I turned around and came back to the campfire, and Kathy had a turn, and you know, we sort of all took turns. Bob, you went up at one point. Dave, all the other guys did as well.
Okay.
We all sort of went up there.
And what happened, Kathy, when you approached them?
When I approached them, I got probably a little closer than that. I was just, I kind of stepped in the middle, probably more like 25 feet, and I just said, you know, my name, hey, how you doing? And I actually saw the red eye glow come right at me, and at first I was like, ugh, you know, but they settled kind of in the bushes right in front of me.
So they sort of approached you?
Yes, they approached me. And so I'm still just talking away and just going, you know, all you got to do is just show yourself, it's all good, you know, nobody means you any harm, go ahead and stand up, you know, nothing. And after, you know, probably 5 or 6 minutes of that, the one on the left whistled, and the one on the right responded. So I whistled really pathetically.
So you heard these they
very
whistled.
Distinct whistles. The one on the left whistled again. The one on the right whistled again.
After
I whistled,
you whistled.
Then I whistled.
What was the whistle like? Was it a single note? Was it a
no?
Was it
like
okay,
kind of like that. And that was actually better than I did it then.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Your throat isn't dry with nerves now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when the scary red-eyed monsters aren't right there in front of you, you can do lots of things.
So it was right, left, me, right, left, me, right, left.
That's
and
cool.
It was like they were communicating. And then I felt like dismissed. You know, like when, you know, they were saying to each other, we're not interested in this. And I went,
she's boring. Send another one over.
Yeah. Pshaw, we've seen her before. And so I said, oh, okay. Well, okay, I'm leaving now. And I turned to go down. And we weren't using any lights at that time. So I shot over my shoulder. I said, look, if I fall down, I don't want to hear any crap out of you about it. And I heard a whoo real quick. And I went, oh, okay. And so I made it back fine, you know, but then I was like, oh God, everybody's got to go back, you know. And I asked everybody, did anybody whistle? What's going on here? And I was just kind of amazed, you know, by the whistling, that I could still see the red eye glow through the brush.
Right.
We had night vision equipment with us. Kathy had what, Gen 2?
No, I have Gen 3.
Right. And speaks for myself, I could not see anything through the night vision up there. I would look
up.
Was the
moon out? Was there any ambient light besides the fire?
It was a clear night. There were stars.
But it was dark, as it has been this week. We haven't had a moon this week
but
at all.
Like anything underneath the canopy of the trees was pitch black.
Right.
But the sky was bright. Looking through the night vision, I could see lumps of trees and stuff like that. But I would see the eyes, I'd raise the night vision, I would see trees, drop the eye thing away. So my interpretation of that is they were behind the pine needles and stuff
in
like that.
Trees,
just because all you could see was just a wall of illuminated trees. Right. So the night vision wasn't penetrating it. But that said, when they did come forward to you, Kathy, Jerry, who was with us, and I'm going to speak for Jerry, but he's hanging in the background here and confirming and denying what we say. But Jerry said he saw a figure through his night vision when they approached Kathy. So
some shape was moving in there.
Yeah.
Bob, did anything happen when you approached? With your sultry tones, and did you?
I sweet talked them.
Did
and
you?
They came over to me.
And they sort of rubbed up against.
That's right. Yeah. like I said, I only saw a couple of flickers of red, and I was really disappointed that I couldn't see the eye shine that they were describing. I did approach a couple of times, I think, and then the one time that I think I got the biggest reaction, at least from those that were observing, was I got pretty close. I got fairly close. I'm not sure how feet wise, how many feet you could say, maybe 20 feet. And I walked off to the side rather than, I think we'd all been approaching directly straight on. And then I approached straight on, stopped at a spot, and then I went laterally and just kind of did a semicircle to one side around them. And stood over there sort of off to the side, if you will, from where they had been standing, and stood there and talked to them. And, you know, just a soft voice saying, you know, look, if come on out, let me see you.
Yeah.
You know, just talking to them and looking at them. And I didn't.
You didn't perceive anything happening during that?
But what Catherine and I both saw was when Bob went off to the side, dude on the left, we call him Lefty maybe, but he immediately repositioned himself to get a better look at Bob. And what that told me was they were on the ground and yet tall, because we saw him go bop, bop, bop. We saw him move along. Like, he walked.
It's fascinating.
He did not swoop like an owl, because at this point I was thinking, okay, maybe we could be seeing, Woodnock aside, Whistling aside, this could all be incidental stuff and we could be seeing owls.
Right.
But an owl doesn't go bop, bop, bop and walk along.
Right.
It swoops.
It's fascinating to me that only some of you saw. I mean, and
it drives me crazy.
Consistently, you saw it.
It drives me crazy.
And others of you hardly saw it at all. Okay. There's something there. I don't know what it is, but
one possible read on that is that maybe the guys who didn't see as much were not looking quite the same place we were, or maybe they moved a little bit over to one side, because if you weren't in line with the fire, you couldn't see the eyes. Like, if you didn't have your back to the fire and your face looking directly at them, you wouldn't see them because you're out of line of the reflection, right?
Or maybe they just weren't as cool as you.
So
how did all this end? I mean, so you're sitting there for hours walking up and down, and
Well, let me interject here that it was obvious that there was something up there, and it was obvious that they were seeing something, because they were reacting at the same time and saying the exact same thing.
So it wasn't happening independently in their minds.
No,
they were seeing something.
They weren't coming up with a story or concocting a story. Right. And when something would happen, they would both gasp and go into the right. It's like it was simultaneous. Whatever they were seeing, they were both seeing
the exact same thing.
That's at the same time.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
Not a lie agreed upon.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. It was frustrating for those of us who couldn't see it.
I didn't quite comprehend how the difference between what we were seeing and you guys were seeing until afterwards, when we were all discussing it in the aftermath. And I'm going, wow, really? Man. And I felt really bad, because I'll be honest with you, I was keen to get as much time up there with these eyes as possible. So I hope I didn't.
Well, you're the tourist,
right?
You want to maximize your experience, right?
Yeah. So I paid a lot of money, dang it. I wanted to be there.
Right.
But so anyway, I tried to go up there as much as I could. And I think we had a big powwow after a while. Oh,
right.
Go,
you know what? I just had another thought, too. Of course, now we had gone through this plan of let's try and be something that would be attractive to them, that would make them curious. And Daniel and Kat, and of course, we were making a lot of noise too. So in order that not everybody would be, you know, their hearing would be ruined by the noise, the sound, the singing, the laughter, we had them posted, stationed away from us. So, and that's, if I remember correctly, that's when they saw this eye shine appear. Now, the rest of us that were making the noise and everything, we were right at the fire, and they would say, come look at these eyes. And we would come and we'd go up, and in retrospect, it was less than a minute later, we're trying.
Right.
I'd been staring at a fire.
Right,
for
so your night vision was very different.
Right, and I come up and it's right there, and I'm still seeing fire.
Right.
In my eyes.
And actually, I do know some people who, when they do what you guys are doing, they sit away from their fire for that very reason. But yeah, that's an interesting point.
Well, it also it makes me think, too, that while I was looking at something that to me looked very, very bright, by that point my eyes were so dilated
right.
that I no longer have a good gauge of how bright they were, because right. anything that's not black looks bright. You know what I mean? At
yeah,
that point.
I know exactly what you mean.
So you know, I was looking at them going, heck, are these things self-illuminated? How is this happening? Mm-hmm. I can, having witnessed that, I can totally appreciate why some people would say, no, they glow with no light.
Right.
Because it has to be said, where they were on the little knoll back to the fire, I looked on Google Earth later on, that is 400 feet, which is a phenomenal distance to right. see eyeshine at, I think, I would expect. And yet yeah. we did. So, incredibly reflective. And that's also a problem, because if what we saw was Sasquatch, and if Sasquatch are primates, as in, you know, members of the yep. ape family, much like we are, then they would be the only ones with reflective eyes, because no others do. And
right.
that would be remarkable.
Right.
So, there's another level of
huh? And there's a difference between red eye, you know, when you get your picture taken
yes.
and your eyes reflect, and what you see, reflective eye shine from things like mm. deers and dogs and things like that. Right. I mean, there's a very different,
mm.
it's a different phenomenon. So what happens, I mean, you're there for 4 hours. Do you just say, I can't do this anymore and I leave, or do they leave, or how does this standoff end?
It was not good.
Yeah, we had a powwow around the fire. We're like, what are we doing here, guys? Because nothing's changing. I feel we've been very respectful, and it's all been really nice. And Kathy made the comment, which I totally appreciate, was true. Was it's been an amazingly peaceful interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And that really was true. There was no sense of menace when we went up the fire. The anxiety going up there was the anxiety, you know, we were taking with us, because, you know, what are these things? So I sort of said, well, and it's been good, you know, I feel like this has been great. Obviously I would love to have more, but I don't know how we're going to get it, because they won't reveal themselves. And I think, Bob, you sort of said, well, we'll screw the respect for a second. You're going home on a plane tomorrow. What are you going to be kicking yourself for the rest of your life for not having done? And
right.
I'm like, well, I would want to say that I was, why did I not just walk in there and have a good look? And so I said, okay, well, I'll volunteer to just walk up and see how close I can get before I either get growled at, or they move back, or something happens. Anyway, let's just see how far we can provoke this now.
Uh-huh.
So Kathy kindly held my hand, and we volunteered to go up there together. And first we got as far as I guess the bottom of the little knoll that they were on. So what would you say that we were, maybe 20-30 feet from?
Maybe
them?
20 feet.
Yeah, 20 feet.
So pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and we
close.
Talked to them for a bit. I think Kathy stepped forward first, and interesting enough, of these four entities, there were distinct differences between them, in that the three on the left, the middle two and the two on the one on the left, were the ones that moved around the most during the whole thing. In fact, the two in the middle would interchange, they'd swap with each other all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty close together all the time, swapping in and out and moving a bit. Guy on the left moved quite a bit, especially when Bob went up there. But the dude on the right, who was, in my view, the tallest of all of them, stayed stock still the whole time. And
sort of like the camp chaperone, just...
That's
yeah.
my interpretation
yeah.
of it. My observation is, he stood still. My interpretation is, maybe he was, you know, the watchdog. You know,
right.
maybe he was the one who was in charge. But anyway, when Kathy approached, I saw his eyes dilate, which was really cool, because all of a sudden the eye shine got much bigger and a little brighter and maybe slightly yellowish. I don't know. Maybe I'm remembering that wrong. But and then very, very quickly settled back down to small red again. And then
and
when Kathy stepped
that's
back,
that's a fascinating observation. I mean,
well,
that is a very specific observation.
I think it's an important observation, because what that says is the eye shine, the shine we're seeing, is coming from inside the eyeball, because it's affected
right.
by the dilation,
right.
which I took to be surprise.
You're getting a view of reflection behind the pupil.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Right. So you approach them, and the one on the right
yep,
sort of gets alarmed for a
yep,
moment,
yep.
and then he realizes, hey, I'm still 8 feet tall, so
I can crush her.
Right, right. What happens when you do that, Kathy?
Well, I was just trying to gauge on what are we going to do now,
mm,
you know,
right.
kind of thing. And it was just, we were just trying to see, could we get him to come out? And then Daniel says, well, you know, I'm going for it.
Yeah.
So
we're taking apples with us.
Uh-huh. And go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I walked up directly up to the edge of the wood line and kind of stood just inside the tree line, and they moved back.
You could hear it.
Yeah, could you
could hear it.
You
heard
hear
the footfalls.
I heard him go, whoa, like, oh, we didn't expect that.
Yeah, like not a vocalization,
went,
but they moved back.
Yeah, he went up the hillside so fast they were startled and that you could hear him pulling back.
So you would pierce the bubble at
yes.
that point. Yeah.
Now, I lost sight of them all at that moment, and then I caught a glimpse of one more. He'd walked deeper back into the woods. I caught a glimpse of the eyes popping up from behind a tree and looking at me and then popping backwards and again. And we'd taken apples up. Tom Yammerin had brought these lovely organic apples with us, and we'd kindly taken some up there. And so I sort of stood there, and I suddenly felt like I just felt like a jerk. I'll be honest with you. I just felt like, oh man, I've blown it. I've ruined a situation. I've acted like a big dumb presumptuous human. And so I very nervously, like, oh, okay. Hey, well, I brought you an apple. and then I suddenly thought, I think I want to go back down to the fire now. So I tossed the apple, and it was a terrible girly
you
throw.
You threw the apple at the Bigfoot.
Well, no, not at the Bigfoot. I threw it underarm. I threw it up. And just because I'm that good at sports, it went about 20 feet up and came down about 5 feet in front of me. And then everything that happened after this, I'm really fuzzy on what order it happened in, because it happened so fast
yeah.
And I was now quite adrenaline pumped.
Yeah.
I turned, and Kathy, correct me if you think I get at the end of this wrong. I turned around to come back. Kathy threw her apple in.
I was lettered in softball, so
yours was an impressive throw.
Yes.
And I hauled that sucker in there, and I
overarm,
heard it
straight
overarm,
direct,
straight
in,
through,
straight at him.
Real fast, and I heard it hit something, and I heard a whoo,
which
just like that.
I heard that too, but what I heard, in my interpretation, was it was a stomp. I thought it felt like somebody had just dropped a huge rock on the ground or a big foot,
some kind of big sound,
a big sound, yeah.
And then just the whole mood turned really, really ugly. And then there was a wood knock then to our right.
How close?
Just
like
right
50,
there.
50 feet?
At
tops?
The most.
Tops?
All kinds of wrestling on the right-hand
yeah.
side.
Loads
like
of movement.
Just all this scuffling. And then I just felt like I had the impression they were coming down on us. And so we kind of grabbed Daniel. I said, we've kind of stirred the horse. Now we better get out of here. And then, unfortunately, we decided to put on our white light and to see better because we had no light, and we turned and I caught a flash of a reflector.
I saw that
and
too.
It scared the crap out of me. I thought it was
like a road reflector.
Yeah, it was
yeah.
like that.
But at the time we didn't know it was. We just suddenly saw this light
bright
off to
light.
The off directly to our left now coming back, so opposite of what it was before. And it freaked us out because both of us thought, oh my God, they're coming around. They're coming around the side. They're actually going to, like,
the whole army of them.
They're going to pincer movement us. And so we're kind of freaking out doing.
So we told the guys what. You know, basically, we probably should get out of here. We've outstayed our welcome.
That must
so
have been
left.
Funny, us coming running into camp, like, woo! You know, we come at the frog arms waving in the air. We're going to go, we're going to go.
Daniel came running in, grabbed the shovel, starts throwing dirt on the fire. We're done. Get in the truck.
Too bad we got to go. I have no memory of this at all, either.
Knocking sodas out of everybody's hands.
You're done.
We'll clean it up tomorrow. Just come on.
Man, so but in some short order, which I have no memory of, we all were in the trucks instantly, which you had parked facing out, which I think is very smart. And we all, you know, bugged out. And I'm now.
And as you drive out of there, your headlights are illuminating that area.
And we're looking. And the
right.
first thing we see is the road stanchion with the reflective marker. And Kathy
like,
and I just, head slap.
That's what that is.
Oh, that's not an army.
But then I'm glued to the window looking to try and see if I can catch a glimpse of something up on the hill as we go past.
Right.
We didn't see anything. So they must have stayed inside the tree line or they'd left.
Right.
And we all hot-tailed it down to our campsite, which was probably only like a couple of miles away.
Yeah,
which I must admit was not hugely reassuring.
Right.
Because we both got here feeling like, oh, I think we've ticked them off, you know.
Right.
So
and I have to imagine that you're all pumped when you get here. I mean, it's not easy to come down off an experience like that.
No.
No. Yeah. No. Everybody was going, what the hell happened? And we're like, we should not go to bed.
We had no clue. We had no clue because, you know, we've been doing this all evening, taking turns up there, and then they just come running back. And, all
right,
let's go. What happened? Shut up.
Get out of here.
That's what happened. Shut up.
We'll explain in the car. Come on, let's go.
I feel actually really bad about that now because what I actually feel like is that maybe it didn't need to be the end of the encounter. Maybe we actually, if we just calmed down and not freaked out about the road stanchion, maybe it actually didn't have to be, and you guys might have actually had the chance to see more when they all came charging out of the bush to kill us.
Yeah.
But
look at that. There's your chance.
Your last vision would have been very dramatic.
Yeah, yes.
Let's look in our hands for the hair, right? Isn't that what you always say, Kathy?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's in my hand.
But when we went back the next morning, the apples were all gone, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hey, anything could have taken them. And we searched and searched for tracks, but the ground up on there was so hard packed and covered in pine needles that you just couldn't, you know, there were a few rocks rolled out here and there, but really we just couldn't see anything that looked like a track. Here and there where there were bare patches of ground, you saw some deer tracks and stuff like that, but they were not fresh. And we looked for hairs and anything that might, you know, be corroborating evidence. And frustratingly, of course, there was nothing that you could put your finger on. But the one thing that I was startled at, and it still floors me to this day, was when I had approached the eyes the second time, I marked a spot and looked at the guy on the right, who was the tallest one, and just noted where his eyes were in relation to a break in the tree line where I could see the stars shining through, mm-hmm. so that I would have a gauge of measuring his height the next day.
That's good thinking.
And when we came back the next day and I stood in that same spot, I gasped, because he was huge. He was as tall as one of the small trees, which I believe he must have been standing just behind. And that had to be like an 8 or 9 foot tree, at least.
Right.
So I'm still in awe of how big he must have been. And there's no way he could have been an owl, because that little tree, by the time he got to the top of it, where he was where his eyes were, was just a tiny little wee
pygmy owl, just a little like an 8 ounce
yeah,
owl.
Yeah, with eyes like, you know, 6 inches apart or whatever.
He's not very attractive, but
it's frustrating for me, because we never got that silhouette.
Yeah.
So I can never say 100% for sure I saw a Bigfoot, which is, of course, the ultimate dream.
Right.
Instead, what I like to say is that I experienced the phenomenon, because I saw eye glow. I got the Kathy got the whistles. We heard the woof, whatever it was. Uh-huh. We saw something that might have been a footprints. We had the tree knocks, all that kind of stuff. All that sort of thing, to me, points Sasquatch, and I'm struggling to find any other wildlife that I can squeeze into this scenario mm-hmm. that actually fits the bill. I just can't. Nothing that's taller than we were, walking on the ground with the glowing eye, you know, the eyes and all that kind of stuff. So I say I experienced the phenomenon, but as to what exactly it was, I'm still trying to be as rational and cautious as possible. And of course, the other problem is, you know, opinion bias in a situation like this. I came over here looking for Sasquatch. I mean, you imagine me going back home. Hey, I'm going to go hang out with some friends. We're going to be a Bigfoot tourist.
Right.
Come back. Saw some.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like, yeah,
yeah
right. You, my credibility
well,
is
the first
gone.
Thing they ask you is like, so, did you find Bigfoot?
And I'm
like, well,
yes.
Yeah, kind of, I did.
Like,
yes.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact.
Yeah. So,
well, of course, when you it is easier to find things when you start looking for them as opposed to not looking for them.
Right.
But anyway.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, you've got to look at the odds and say that would be remarkable.
So we're getting to the point now where it's almost time for us to go, but I don't want to gloss over what happened to us the past couple of days. So we're back here. It's a year later. Flash forward a year. We've come back to the same campsite. Same campground anyway. We've gone back to the same area to do the call blasting, and we've been out there now. This is our fourth night. So the first three nights we went out there and we broadcast sounds into this valley and I don't want to tell the story because, of course, I'm the host and you're the guests, but I was there. I will say that some we've heard some remarkable things the past couple of days from that crest. And I'll also preface this whole experience by saying I've gone call blasting a number of times and have heard only one thing that was of any, like, even partially interesting. But we've done it three times, three nights, and we've heard cool things each night. So, Bob, tell us about the first night we went out there.
Well, the first night we went out and broadcast a purported Bigfoot scream, and was not immediately, but it was within maybe 15 seconds, a sustained return call that was identical to what we call blasted, only it was much longer in duration, and it wasn't terribly close, but it wasn't too far away either. It's kind of hard to speculate.
It was clearly audible.
You know, clearly audible.
You could tell
everybody
what you
heard the exact same thing, a long sustained call, and that call, the return call, set off the coyotes.
Yeah, our original broadcast did not set off the coyotes, but
not.
The return did.
Yes.
Yeah, that was an interesting.
Yes, but it was after, at the end of that sustained that long, absolutely identical to what we call blasted.
Right, right. And that's essentially all we had that night.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you that if that's all that had happened, I would have been very happy, because, as I said, I've gone call blasting several times, only heard one thing, and that was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was what we broadcast,
right.
But it was longer.
Right.
So I think we did it a couple more times, but we didn't hear anything else. It was very dark, and it was getting kind of late at that point, and it was cold. The next night, second night we went out, and Kathy, what happened that night?
Well, we broadcast around that one would have been 10:15 or so, and we got an again within 15 seconds of the broadcast a start of a return call, which sounded like a second Bigfoot interrupting or call interrupting the mm-hmm. first. Three wood knocks in between, and then the first call either starting again or finishing with a kind of
yeah, it got real guttural grouchily. And weird at the end, yeah.
And then and that ended, and then more coyotes on top of that.
Same distance. I mean, same it wasn't distance, any closer. Exact, it wasn't any further location. Away. Right.
Exactly. And it started out exactly the same as the night before, but it just got more guttural
right.
from there. And then we call blasted another time, and we got several calls back and forth. What was interesting is we had another occasion of three wood knocks and what I heard was a fourth return.
From a different location.
But we also could hear what sounded like people talking.
Uh-huh.
And so it was
which was very confusing to us at the time.
Very confusing, but we kind of figured that out. Then the next day that we had unfortunately call blasted into, apparently where some people were staying, and they looked to possibly have abandoned their camp.
Yeah, I will admit right up front, I am not proud of this.
This is an accident. I am morally
we're
so sorry.
Very conflicted. But what I saw, because I have a third generation night vision, and we could see... as we were peering down in the valley, a couple of little spots where maybe there were campfires in amongst the trees, very small, not very bright, very easy to miss. But after we'd done the call blasting and after the return and all the coyotes and everything else, one of those fires got very, very large. I mean, you still couldn't see it with your naked eye.
No, right.
But through the night vision, it was like a freaking beacon.
Yeah.
These guys looked like they poured their entire week's worth of firewood onto the fire.
Right.
And we were hearing voices like, what the hell was that? Or something to that extent. What? There's somebody down there? And so I felt really bad.
They were animated male and female voices.
Yeah.
Excited.
I just want, again, state for the record, I feel terrible about this.
They were not in an approved campground. They were hiding.
They were. They were off in the woods.
Yeah. Right. And we hope your marriage makes it through.
Sorry, but sucks to be you. It was funny for
us. You're getting in the way of science.
Sorry.
This is what happens when you stand in the way of science. So the third night, we decide we're going to be a little trickier. So Daniel and I go down into this valley, and I'm telling this correctly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to try to triangulate. We're trying to get as close as we can to these returns and try to triangulate where they might be. And what we find, and that's when we discovered that one of the campsites had, even though the tents were there, we drove by it at night and it was pitch black. There was nobody there, so perhaps they had just left in a very big hurry. There was another campsite that was still populated. And we sat down there. We did the call blast. You guys heard a return.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel and I heard nothing. We heard nothing where we were.
Only the original call blast,
right.
Which came through loud
and
clear.
It was creepy as hell. It was fantastic.
The cool thing about it was when you're standing next to a call blast, there's a certain synthy kind of quality to it because it's coming out of a speaker.
Right.
But when we were down in the valley, oh, man, it sounded so natural. So it
sounded perfectly
natural.
Again,
those poor campers.
Yeah.
Because that sounded pretty scary.
So then you guys just, that was about 9:15, and you guys decided to come back after you didn't, we pretty much knew that we had heard the human voices from the night before, and maybe they were gone. And so then we call blasted again at 10 o'clock, and we made the agreement that if we got a return call this time, that we were going to answer it with immediately following.
We're trying to get into a conversation.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Whatever that means.
Yeah. So we call blasted at 10, we got an immediate response. Unfortunately, Brian...
Operator error
call blasted us a different scream instead of the first one we used, but we got a response again, and then we did our usual call and then didn't get anything past that. So
there was, it was our call, its return, our incorrect call, its return, and then we called again and there was nothing after that.
Yes. Yeah. And then we got nothing else after that.
Yeah, and this was all in the case of like, I don't know, a minute?
Or so. And it seems like we're not getting much after 10:15, 10:30 because it got bitter cold last night. And so...
Which is one of the reasons why we're trying to get out there tonight.
Yeah, so that we can do it. And then today we scouted out where we think the call is coming from, and we call blasted about 4 o'clock just to get a response, and it appears we did in the afternoon.
4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to go
back. Because one of the things we asked is, like, well, why don't we ever do this during the day when it's warm and not so creepy
and
feeling?
And we can see.
And we can see things, right.
Because Bigfoot's in the dark and it's creepy.
Right.
But we did get a return.
Yeah.
We got a miracle.
So yeah, anyway, that's essentially a synopsis of our last couple of days, which was, as I said, I mean, that's awesome. It's what you do this for, right? I can't say that we know exactly what are making these sounds, but we're getting the same sounds back that we're sending out, and that's fantastic.
They should be putting it in the Californian tourist guides as an attraction when you come to California, because I tell you what, big for touristing, man. Try
a lot of money there, huh?
Well,
yeah. Just be careful where you camp.
Yeah.
Make sure you're in approved locations. We should maybe publish a schedule of call blasts, so they know. Oh, it says 9:15. It's fine. It's not real. All right. Well, I think I'm going to leave it at that. We want to get out. We want to go do it again. See what happens. So, thank you, guys. Thanks, Kathy, Bob, Daniel, for being on.
Thank you.
Our first on location Bigfoot show.
All right.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks
for having us.